Thank you. That's been, I think, some really nice talks that we've had so far, and I'm going to try to relate some of the previous talks that we have already seen into my talk, so I wasn't able to practice that since I hadn't seen these talks in advance, obviously. So if I stumble, please forgive me. I'm going to start out just with some really, really simple concepts. Why do we care about carbon? Well, carbon fixation obviously drives plant growth. When you look at the biomass of a plant, about 90% of it is carbon, hydrogen, and oxygen. So without carbohydrates, without photosynthesis, we're not going to have growth. So understanding how plants fix carbon and how they use carbon is really key to how plants are going to grow. So when you think about the carbon balance of a plant, you can take a very simplistic approach. So there are two components to it, photosynthesis and respiration. And when you look at the overall carbon gain of a plant, carbon gain is simply photosynthesis minus respiration, and then you can draw a very simplistic conclusion from that, that photosynthesis is good and respiration is bad. And I'm not saying that I believe this, but this is a concept that when it first became easy to measure carbon exchange rates of plants, what the initial approach was by some people to try to improve crop growth was to simply select for low respiration rates. And in my mind, selecting for low respiration is the equivalent of selecting a fuel-efficient car based on low emissions from the tailpipe. And if you get a car and you measure emissions from the tailpipe, well, of course, you get the lowest emissions when a car either doesn't move at all or when it is going very slow. So a slow-moving car is actually very fuel-efficient despite having very low emissions. Likewise, I think a plant with a very low respiration rate is likely to be a very slow-growing plant. Respiration and photosynthesis are not independent processes. So if you actually want to select a car for low emissions or a plant for low respiration, you may get unanticipated results that may be less than optimal. This may not use a lot of fuel, but you're not going to get anywhere. So that's probably not a good approach. So Jeff already reviewed the basics of respiration, and we typically tend to think of respiration as the combination of glycolysis and the Krebs cycle. You may incorporate some other pathways in that. And then what we often say is the basic role of respiration is simply to convert carbohydrates into CO2, water, and then the production of energy in the form of ATP and NADH. I think we need to not think about respiration in this way, because in reality, respiration is much more important than what is implied by just these two pathways, because what respiration also does is it provides carbon backbones for pretty much every single biosynthetic pathway that a plant has. Every compound that a plant makes, pretty much, is dependent on things that are produced during glycolysis or the Krebs cycle. So when you think about it this way, you can imagine that if you select for low respiration rates, you're not going to be producing a lot of backbones to make whatever else it is that the plant needs to make. So this is a critical role of respiration, to provide carbon backbones, skeletons for metabolism. I'm going to dive into the concept of growth and maintenance respiration, and I will focus on this and related topics for much of the rest of my talk. But if you're not familiar with it, the concept is pretty simple. A plant makes a certain amount of carbohydrates. It needs to use some of those carbohydrates just to maintain itself. And the amount of maintenance respiration, as we've heard already, depends on, you can look at dry weight, you can look at protoplasm, cytoplasm, protein content, whatever you want to stick in that box. It doesn't really matter for the concept. And then it depends on a maintenance coefficient, how much energy is needed to maintain a certain amount of dry weight. Now, after the plant has used its maintenance needs, has met its maintenance needs, it can then use the rest of the carbohydrates for growth. And Jeff already looked at this as well. Growth is certainly not 100% efficient, because there is a certain amount of carbohydrates that actually get converted into biomass, while there is also a certain amount of respiration that is needed to drive the metabolism associated with growth. And just like with maintenance respiration, growth respiration can be expressed as a function of two things, the growth rate, however you want to express that. Again, the units are not that important, and a growth respiration coefficient. So basically, that means that you can express respiration as a function of maintenance and growth, and bring included a nutrient component to this. But the bottom line is that you can then measure the specific respiration, and if you plot that versus the relative growth rate of plants, you can do a regression line and estimate the maintenance and growth respiration coefficients, assuming that those are constants. If they are not constant, it becomes a little bit more complicated. I actually am going to use a slightly different approach to estimate maintenance and growth respiration coefficients, but it's based on the same idea. I'm going to show some data that was collected on lattice plants of different ages. And what I did with these plants is I measured the carbon exchange rate of plants of different ages over a 24-hour period in these acrylic chambers. I mimicked inside of those chambers the greenhouse conditions under which those plants were grown. And then based on those data, I could calculate the growth rate of the plants, which I simply expressed as the net amount of carbon that was taken up by the plants in the 24-hour period. So when you look at a diagram of what idealized data would look like, the white bar at the top indicates the light period, the black bar is the dark period. So you have a certain amount of net photosynthesis during the day, respiration in the dark, and when you essentially integrate those two areas, you can take the total amount of net photosynthesis during the light period, subtract the amount of respiration at night, and you get the growth rate of the plant. So that's pretty simple. And if you then subsequently determine the dry mass of the plants, you also have the relative growth rate of those plants. You can also, from these data, estimate carbon use efficiency if you're willing to make the assumption that respiration rates in the light and dark are the same. That's a whole lot of debate that I don't want to have here today. It's a complicated question. But if you want to calculate carbon use efficiency, you simply take the net amount of carbon fixed during a 24-hour period, and you divide that by the total amount of gross photosynthesis, which is area 1 plus area 3, and that gives you the carbon use efficiency. So this is what the data actually looks like, in this case for a 30-day-old plant. So it looks like it takes the lattice plants about an hour to upregulate their entire photosynthetic pathway before you reach fairly steady state conditions. As soon as the light is turned off, you start measuring respiration. I want to point out that we picked lattice for this particular study for a simple reason. Lattice is a really simple plant. It does nothing but make more leaves. And that really simplifies the data interpretation, because the growth respiration is likely to be very stable over time because you're just making additional leaves. So when you measure bigger plants, in this case 48-day-old plants, you have higher photosynthetic rates and higher respiration rates, not surprising, simply because the plants are bigger. However, when you get beyond a certain threshold, and you look at even bigger plants, so in this case these are 52-day-old plants, the net photosynthesis during the day decreases. That is not because these plants are actually photosynthesizing less. These plants instead are respiring more at night. So when you look at the gross photosynthesis that you can estimate from this, that is actually very, very similar for 48 and 50-day-old plants, but the 50-day-old plants respire more and therefore have a lower net photosynthetic rate, and they are going to have a lower carbon use efficiency because of the higher respiration. So when you plot the carbon use efficiency of plants over time, Jeff showed a cleaner version of this graph in his talk, you see that carbon use efficiency decreases over time, and that is going to be inevitable. I don't think there will be anything. Actually, this is not over time, but as a function of plant weight, but of course the plants get bigger over time. Carbon use efficiency will decline as plants get bigger and will decline over time. So this arrow simply indicates the amount of carbon that gets, or the fraction of carbon that gets allocated to growth processes or to growth, and the rest of the carbon is actually going towards respiration. Now, if you plot the inverse of carbon use efficiency versus the inverse of relative growth rate, you get a nice linear relationship, and you can mathematically derive a relationship between carbon use efficiency, relative growth rate, and the growth and maintenance of aspiration coefficients. So from this regression line, we estimated the growth and maintenance respiration coefficients. The estimates are shown right here. These are actually pretty typical for what is seen in the literature, so that gave me some confidence that these estimates were, if not accurate, at least reasonable. And then once you have those coefficients, you can actually calculate growth respiration and maintenance respiration if you know the size of the plants and their growth rate. So this graph right here shows, as plants get bigger, how much of the respiration is going towards maintenance processes and how much is going towards growth. And what you can see is that if plants get large, maintenance really starts dominating respiration, and growth becomes a pretty small fraction of the overall respiration of that plant. Very similar, again, to things that Jeff already showed. So when you look at the maintenance respiration as a fraction of total respiration, here as a function of plant dry mass, this again shows that maintenance respiration becomes more and more important as plants get bigger. When you plot maintenance respiration instead as a function of the relative growth rate, you see that maintenance respiration is much more important when you have a low relative growth rate than when you have a high relative growth rate. And if you want to somehow minimize the impact of maintenance respiration on plant growth, you need to maintain high relative growth rates. So we've already heard about which processes go into maintenance respiration, and it is really difficult to define exactly which metabolic processes in a plant are maintenance versus which ones are growth. There are definitely some gray areas in there. But what seems to be most important with regard to maintenance respiration is protein turnover. So we've heard Steve talk about that. We've actually heard Bing Root talk about that. So we've seen that the protein turnover in plants can be really, really important. And that is an important part of maintenance. Another important component is actually nutrient homeostasis. And that is related to, how many ions are actually diffusing across membranes and need to be pumped back into the cell or out of the cell to maintain an important balance, the critical balance between those. Nutrient transport throughout the plant, you can argue about whether or not that should be growth or maintenance. I think that is a gray area. Growth respiration is a lot easier to understand and easier to calculate. So it is simply the respiration that is associated with the metabolic pathways that you need to produce the organic compounds needed by the plant. And you can estimate that, as Jeff already showed, from the pathways. And what you see is that the carbon use efficiency, the amount of carbon that gets incorporated versus the amount of carbon that gets used, it depends on what kind of compounds you're making. And I'm glad that Jeff actually pointed out that you may have really big differences in carbon use efficiency when you're making different compounds, but when you look at the actual energy compound of these different, or the energy content of these different compounds, they tend to be pretty similar. So carbon use efficiency can be a little bit deceiving because it takes a lot of energy to make lipids. It takes very little energy to make carbohydrates, to make starch. It takes very little carbon actually to make organic acids, especially. Ian Johnston in 1990 provided some estimates of where the different respiratory processes in a plant, or how important they are when you look at growth respiration. In this example, that accounted for 69% of total respiration. And important components of that growth respiration were the synthesis of amino acids, both in the roots as well as in the shoots, and then the production of proteins from those amino acids. They consume most of that growth respiration. That is a very intensive process for maintenance. The most important processes there appear to be related to protein turnover. So if we can reduce the amount of protein turnover that we have, we may be able to reduce maintenance respiration, which in turn can increased growth. I do want to point out, though, that protein turnover is not, by definition, a bad thing. Protein turnover is absolutely needed because it allows plants to acclimate to different conditions, because plants don't have a constant protein composition. They need different enzymes in different parts of the plants. Plants need to be able to reallocate resources from older shaded leaves to newer leaves. That involves breakdown of proteins and transport of amino acids. So protein turnover, in principle, is not a bad thing. The question is, do we need to have the turnover rates that plants have? So if you want to select plants for high productivity, should you be selecting for high or low respiration? Well, typically, I would say you want to look for high respiration, but it needs to be efficient. This is data, unpublished data, unfortunately, from a friend of mine, Jonathan France, did his work at Utah State University. He grew lettuce at five different temperatures, measured the carbon exchange rate of those plants throughout the life cycle of those plants. And what you see is that, at least in this particular example, photosynthesis on the x-axis is very, very strongly correlated with respiration during the dark period. So what this indicates is that if you select for low respiration rates, you're likely also selecting for low photosynthetic rates. So back to the same question, what can we do to decrease growth respiration? Well, the simple way would be to have plants that grow very slowly, but obviously that is not a good approach because we want plants to grow fast, so that is not a realistic option. Can we change the growth respiration coefficient? Well, that would probably involve having more efficient pathways in plants than we have now. And I don't think it is very likely that we can do much there. I think evolution would have selected against inefficiencies in growth respiration. So on the side of growth respiration, I don't think there are a lot of options to improve efficiencies. But if we can, if it is possible to change the growth respiration coefficient, this diagram shows how, as a function of relative growth rate, the carbon use efficiency would be affected. So a typical growth respiration coefficient is 0.4 grams per gram. If you lower that growth respiration coefficient, you can increase the carbon use efficiency. If the growth respiration increases, the carbon use efficiency is decreased. Those differences start to disappear as the relative growth rate decreases or as the plants get bigger. But again, I don't think there is a lot of opportunity in this area. Instead, where there may be more opportunity is in decreasing maintenance respiration. Of course, if you want to have low maintenance respiration, you could select for small plants, but again, that's not a great agronomic approach. We want plants to grow fast and to get big. So what can we do with regard to decreasing maintenance costs? And I think what we have already heard earlier today here is some examples of decreasing maintenance costs. So Bing Root talked about the supergrass that she selected that has a much lower protein turnover rate. And keep in mind that protein turnover makes up a very big part of the overall maintenance respiration of plants. So that is one area. Another area where I think there may be potential is by looking at membrane composition and decreasing leakage across membranes. And that too is something that Bing Root talked about. So that provides some easy targets. Measuring maintenance respiration is really hard to do, but if we can measure instead protein turnover rates or membrane leakage, they are maybe associated with the maintenance costs in plants. So it provides a much simpler way to select for low maintenance costs. And then Jonathan Lynch, when he was talking about the roots and the parenchyma, well, that is simply having less biomass present in your roots, so that is going to decrease maintenance costs as well. And what he showed in his examples is that that can have a very dramatic impact on growth. So these are, I think, the areas that we probably should be aiming for when we do look for lower maintenance respiration rates. And when you look at the impact that that potentially has on carbon use efficiency. And so these curves were drawn assuming a pretty standard growth respiration coefficient of 0.4 grams per gram. You see that especially here, let's see if I can get the mouse here, especially at still fairly low relative growth rates, there is a very large impact on carbon use efficiency if you can select for lower maintenance coefficient. So if we can reduce protein turnover rate, or if we can improve membrane stability, we can improve the carbon use efficiency. And I'm not all that surprised about some of the yield increases that Jonathan was showing in his talk, because here you're talking about relatively, I have some trouble getting the mouse here, but at these low relative growth rates, you're talking about relatively large plants, and you see a big, big difference in carbon use efficiency. So to me, this is an interesting target. And when I came in here this morning, I didn't realize that we actually had some fairly potentially simple ways to do the phenotyping, for example, with the roots that Jonathan talked about, or the work that Bing Ru showed earlier. Because actually measuring maintenance respiration is a very tough thing to do. It's certainly not something that we can do at a scale that the breeders are going to be happy with. I'm going to completely switch topics, mainly because I noticed that nobody who was on the program seemed to have anything about photorespiration. And I just want to point out that we shouldn't forget about this. Photorespiration in plants can account for a lot of the carbon, a lot of carbon losses. So it's related to the kinetic properties of Rubisco, and it's a function of the CO2 concentration inside of the chloroplast, temperature, and the kinetic properties of Rubisco. On the y-axis, this diagram shows the ratio between photorespiration and photosynthesis as a function of the intercellular CO2 and the temperature. And when you look at a typical C3 plant, this may be the response with regard to photorespiration, where 10 to about 40% of all Rubisco catalyzed reactions may actually be oxygenations rather than carboxylations. So that's a big fraction of the overall Rubisco activity. Now, we are doing a very good job as humans of reducing photorespiration simply by driving our cars around, increasing atmospheric CO2 concentrations. So this curve is going to shift over time to look something like this, and photorespiration is going to be much less important in a future with higher CO2. But what that also means is that the kinetic properties of Rubisco will not be optimal for those conditions. Rubisco, it turns out, is actually optimal for atmospheric CO2 concentrations of about 200 to 250 parts per million. That was a very, very long time ago. And if we can get Rubisco into C3 plants that has the kinetic properties of the Rubisco of a C4 plant in a CO2-rich atmosphere, those plants are going to grow much faster, because C4 Rubisco has kinetic properties that allow for much faster reactions if CO2 is not limiting. So to get to my conclusions, we should keep in mind that typically respiration is positively correlated with growth. So if you want to use respiration to select, you should select for high respiration rates, not low respiration rates. Carbon use efficiency is going to decrease as plants grow. That is inevitable, because maintenance is going to increase. Growth respiration, I think there is not much opportunity there to improve efficiencies, but for maintenance respiration, there are possible targets, and I think we may be able to achieve those targets without actually having to measure maintenance respirations, but to look for things that are related to maintenance respiration that we've heard from previous speakers. And with that, I am done.
Okay, thank you very much.